The Obama administration has issued a new order that requires some federally funded research to be made public. Supporters of the idea say that the order will foster innovation, research, and education, and it will increase the return on taxpayer investment in scientific research. It's a significant change, and here to talk about it are Dr. Lawrence Dreyfus. He's the Vice Chancellor of Research at UMKC. Dr. Dreyfus, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Also here is Brenda Dingley. She's Director of Scholarly Communications at UMKC. Brenda, good morning to you, too.
Good morning.
Well, how big a deal is this, Doctor?
It's a really big deal. And yeah. It dates back several years, and it's kind of a growing steam, if you will, of work that took place back as far as 30 years ago when the concept of open access became very important, and it started from my perspective, in the areas of molecular biology and genetics, where DNA and protein sequence data had to be deposited before papers that contained that data would be published. And so therefore, once that got into place and got into part of the lexicon, if you will, of the biological researchers, then we got into the digital age, and we got into online publications, et cetera. And so the public became more aware of the fact that there's a tremendous amount of data out there. And as taxpayers of the United States, they had a right to.
You're paying for it. It should be available then.
Absolutely,
right?
You're paying for that research with your tax dollars. You should have it available to you.
Brenda, my sense is that this order, some material has already been made public. This just expands
exactly
sort of the availability here. Can you walk us through that just in broad terms?
Well, I think the great example of that is the NIH repository, PubMed Central. Since 2008, the NIH has required that research that it funds, the results and articles would be deposited into the PubMed Central. That now gets on the order of 700,000 hits a day from 700,000 different people. So that's an enormously increase in usage of that data.
And before this time, before this change, what was happening with that? How many hits, how much dissemination were we seeing?
Well, this dissemination was via a formal publication process, and it was primarily found in research libraries.
And so much more limited sort of
very
access
limited.
To the general public.
I think even the ability to find out about it was very limited.
Dr. Dreyfus, was there a big push on to sort of get this change? And were certain sectors of our society clamoring for more open access out there?
Well, there has been. There was part of the White House response was or I should say part of their action was in response to an online poll, if you will, where folks who are really interested in obtaining public access had a write-in campaign, if you will, to help get this directive move forward. Now, coincidentally, there are two bills, one in the House and one in the Senate, that's going on right now to do precisely what the administration's directive has done, although there are a few minor differences in it. But I think that the larger issue has to do with the fact that even for researchers themselves, this really makes obtaining, using, analyzing, and disseminating the data much, much more facile, if you will.
Yeah.
If you go back not so long ago, it was very difficult for researchers to obtain all the information that they actually needed to conduct their work. Now with PubMed Central, for instance, it's not clear whether or not the new directive will roll out as PubMed Central did, but PubMed Central is a tremendously useful piece of a database, if you will, the repository of data, and how it's actually used. I mean, these are publications that are in digital form, meaning that they can be, in many cases, digitally searched for keywords. And then if you're using the data, you can extract it then in its raw form and use it as a researcher.
Yeah, Brenda, I gather that much of this material is not real easy reading, that novels might be a more fun way to spend time than some of the research that's now available here.
Well, that is true. It is very specialized in many cases. That doesn't mean that the layperson can't make use of it.
Like, give me an example. What do you think? What's the potential here? What might happen?
The great example, I think, is the Human Genome Project.
Okay.
That was a 10-year project to map the human genome, and the decision was made very early on to put this material into the public domain and make it immediately available without an embargo period. That is to say, a period of time post-publication when it was not available to anybody except subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
So that has had an enormous impact. I read articles. There's an NIH fact sheet on the Human Genome Project. There have been thousands of disease-causing genes identified. Mm-hmm. There have been thousands of tests for genetic diseases developed. There have been hundreds of biotech firms launched and products launched. They estimate that for a $3.8 billion investment by the research community, the impact is on the order of $800 billion.
Wow. Wow. Well, who's been against this idea, Doctor? I mean, anyone – is the academic community pretty much by and large for this, or am I misreading that?
No, absolutely. The academic community is well behind this
effort. So who's against it?
Well, the only – I shouldn't say only, but one source of resistance historically has been the American Association of Publishers, and maybe Brenda can talk a little bit more about that. But I think that, you know, from their perspective, their business is about selling subscriptions, whether they be hard copy or online. And I think when the NIH directive came out in 2008, they were very much against it because at that time, there was nothing like this out there that they would automatically have the public would have access. Now, given the fact that there were, you know, I think at that time, 12-month embargoes for the most part for data being published. Now, if you look at the journals that are contained in PubMed Central, and I think there are about 1,700 or so different journals, they have access either immediately, 6-month embargo, 12-month embargo. And so you see the whole gamut. What the publishing industry has found over time in these last few years is that it hasn't caused a tremendous impact on their bottom line. And so I think they are coming on board.
Why hasn't it? If it's free online, why – I guess I live in that world with working for a newspaper, so I know exactly what you're talking about. But people are still subscribing to the New England Journal of Medicine, it sounds like.
That's right. And mm-hmm. there are still hard copy subscriptions. There are still library subscriptions out there. And so I think those – The cost of those subscriptions have gone up mm-hmm. in time, and that's just inflation, if you will. But the cost of online publication is not as cheap as you think it might be. It's obviously cheaper than print, but nonetheless, there are costs involved in that. And so those get rolled over to the subscribers. And I think the fact that every university library, most public libraries will subscribe to these major journals – even though they're in electronic version, it does support that industry.
That's interesting. You know, Brenda, I came across something from the Chronicle of Higher Education, an article that was published in December, and it talks about a high school student in Maryland announcing that he had invented a diagnostic test for pancreatic cancer. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, Jack Andraka.
Yes, the test costs 3 cents per use. It works 168 times as fast and more than 400 times as accurately as the best previously existing test. It may also be able to detect ovarian and lung cancers. Jack Andraka?
Yes.
Okay, the inventor is 15 years old. Without open access, Jack Andraka would not have been able to retrieve and read the scientific publications on the web to do what he had to do. That's what we're talking about here, it sounds like.
Exactly, and I think that also illustrates the point that Lawrence was making earlier. He has said in other articles that he made use of open access publications to the extent that he could, but he also charged $1,200 worth of article access fees to his mother's credit card in order to complete his project.
No
so
kidding.
He has
and
now
he wouldn't he can save his $1,200 and find it online.
A good bit of it, one suspects, because a lot of this research is publicly funded. He has now become an open access advocate, and he is now speaking out in favor of the FASTER legislation that Lawrence referenced earlier.
That legislation would do more than what President Obama has signed off on here?
Well, in part it will. It shortens the embargo to 6 months, for one thing, and so that would be a cap. And right now the directive is a 12-month embargo that's actually somewhat flexible. The legislation.
And the embargo is for what? What's the point of the embargo?
The embargo the point of it is to preserve this copyright period. In other words, that a publisher has a period where you will pay for the rights to read this literature.
Okay.
And right now, with the administration's directive, that period for peer-reviewed NIH, or I'm sorry, peer-reviewed federally funded supported research is 12 months.
And legislation would, cut that in half. Then.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the prospect for that legislation? Do you have any feel for that?
Well, the interesting thing is with the directive coming out, it may take some of the wind out of the sails of the legislation. But I think it, since there are bills in both houses, they're bipartisan in nature. There's a lot of support for them. I think they'll go through.
Hmm. You know, you wonder, Brenda, as we talk about this, what's taken so long to get to this point? Again, in this open digital era, we're well into it now. Why is it 2013 that we're finally sort of grappling with this and we're seeing change happen before our eyes?
Well, there has been resistance. Mm-hmm. Lawrence referenced the concerns that publishers have. And I don't think any of our government representatives particularly want to knock the legs out from under any industry. Mm-hmm. But I think also it's just a change in thinking. It represents a change in thinking on the part of researchers. There's a whole
It's a seismic change in a sense. It's a big deal in that world, yeah.
And it is not easy to develop the infrastructure to make that doable.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think there are lots of different models to support open access publications, and I don't think that has been resolved either.
Mm-hmm. That kid is really, Jack Andraka, is really 15 years old. That's a breathtaking story.
Yes, and there are others like
mm-hmm.
that.
Lots of them out there
yes.
that can be affected by this. So is the word out there, Dr. Dreyfuss? Are people aware that this the world has shifted here a little bit?
I don't think it's out yet. I think that
after the show it's going to be, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that in some of the data that NIH puts out for PubMed Central, for instance, 40% of the hits that Brenda referred to earlier are by the public at large, and a smaller percentage are hits from universities. And so the public is already taking advantage of what the NIH has done. Once this broader view, if you will, comes into play, I think it's going to be tremendous. Now, I will say that how that rolls out is it's not set yet. Each
mm-hmm.
Agency, the burden is upon them to develop a plan as to how they're going to roll it out. And there may be participation by universities. There may be a centrally formulated process like PubMed Central, but that remains to be seen.
Is there any drawback to this outside of the impact on the publishing industry and in the various journals, Brenda? Is there a downside out there that you can think of?
It's not easy to do. Part of this directive—
What's not easy to do?
It's not easy to do what the directive says agencies need to do. One
of
them—
Getting all the stuff out there. Yeah.
Getting, not just making the articles public, but also making the data, the supporting data, public. Uh-huh. That is a different sort of problem, and it's a much more complex one. And I don't think anybody actually has solved that problem.
It's complex. Why?
It's complex because the data is of so many different types. It's supported by very specialized software, which becomes obsolescent.
And does the president's directive require that all this material be put out in public?
There's some flexibility, but that is the thrust of it.
Yeah, okay.
That is the agencies are to come up with a way to do that. I think some of them probably have a better established way of doing it, but some of them will have to develop that from scratch.
Well, this is very complicated stuff, but you both did a great job of sort of keeping this user-friendly. I really appreciate that. That was just great. Dr. Lawrence Dreyfuss is a Vice Chancellor of Research at UMKC, and Brenda Dingley is a Director of Scholarly Communications at UMKC. Thank you both for coming in. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.